From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Hey you, who said that? Baby, how you been?
Doot dot doot dot doot dot doodle-ot doodly doop ba doodle doo doo. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're gonna talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, it's Monday, October 4th, 2010.
This is show 098.
That's a lot of shows.
That's a lot of shows. A scant 2 shows away from the big 100, even though technically we've probably done more than 100 because you've done some little fill-in podcasts with the puppet.
And we recorded 2 last week.
Yeah, that's true. Well, one and two-thirds.
If you weren't with us, if you're new to the podcast, we had James Urbaniak, most famously in our circles of Venture Brothers fame, and ended up doing 2 podcasts. Go back and find out why by listening to it. While we were talking about 100 podcasts, I was thinking.
What were you thinking?
That I'm not thinking. Just that, you know, 100, when like a sitcom or a TV show, they always do something special.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our whole thing with this podcast is to not be all slick and, you know, production-like.
Heavens no.
So why would we make an exception for our 100th podcast, right? That said, you know, like I certainly don't imagine lining up all kinds of special guests and sound effects and crap like that, you know?
Right, right.
But I'd be interested in finding out, well, from you, Paul, you know, when we're not talking, because we can talk about that anytime.
So you want to find out from me psychically?
Psychically. And from you listening less psychically, or psychically if more, you have that kind more, of power.
More textually.
Or more likely textually, either through the Twitters or emails or through the comment section on the website. What do you want us to do for the 100th podcast that might mark the occasion? What were some of your favorite podcast moments of ours? Because we're certainly going to kiss our own asses.
Oh, you bet we are. Even more so than normal.
Yeah, maybe that's what we'll do. Maybe the 100th podcast will be 100% talking about ourselves. And Felicia Day, since she plays a part in this story.
It has been mentioned that we completely missed Acknowledgement Day.
We did. The thing is, we realized that we had intended to talk about it, and then, I don't know, we were just feeling contrarian against ourselves or something.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what I think it is, myself. First of all, I'm looking at the calendar and I'm realizing I really don't remember what day it was. I want to say September 4th or something like that, but that may be entirely arbitrary. It might have been August.
No, it was September, because I remember jotting it down for another podcast to mention it. You just keep talking and I'll tell you what the date is
okay.
in a bit.
Sure. So over the course of that, wow, that sound of you, it sounds like you're going through sheafs of paper. Yes, like that.
No, I was petting my cat.
Oh.
He's very crinkly.
I don't know. Crinkly cat. Yes, we all saw in the video how crinkly your cat is.
Oh, yeah. Check that out on our YouTubes.
But I digress. I think, speaking for myself, it did occur to me to mention it after people had said, you forgot Acknowledgement Day. And I realized that it felt awkward because, I mean, not that we're best buddies or anything with Felicia Day at this point.
For those of you
who don't know what we're talking about, when at the very beginning of this podcast, in the early days, we set a goal, a childish, impish goal that we wanted to get Felicia Day to acknowledge us. We didn't know her. We'd only known her from her work on The Guild and in Dr. Horrible. And This was 2 years ago, I guess.
Wow. Yeah, it was.
And over the within a couple of months through various, we wanted her to acknowledge us, but we didn't want to work hard at it. Like, we didn't want to make a desperate ploy. We just sort of wanted it to work through word of mouth and underground. And she did eventually acknowledge us over. Go ahead.
Oh, much like our entire career and our lives in general, I think that could sum up our approach to things.
Is yes.
Not wanting to put ourselves out too much.
Yes, exactly. But she did acknowledge us. And then over the course of the past 2 years, we have ended up becoming reasonably well acquainted with Ms. Day.
I would say we are friends. It's not like we hang out all the time, but I would say that we hang out all the time when it's possible.
Yeah, so. Yeah. We certainly have hung out socially with her on several occasions, and we know the gang at the guild now, and they know us, and so it's all awesome for us. Hooray. But to go back after having become friends with this person and then to try and sort of celebrate this little sort of tee-hee, hope this girl talks about us and mentions our name. It's sort of like, to remain crawled up my own ass, like, now that we are good friends with Will Wheaton and Adam Savage through our work on these Wootstock shows, it would be like walking up to one of them and asking them for their autograph at this point.
You mean that wouldn't be cool?
It wouldn't be cool, and it just feels weird. It'd be like asking, like, your brother for an autograph.
I don't have a brother. That would be weird.
It would be like
I get it now. I totally get it now.
It would be like asking your sister for an autograph.
Okay, now I understand completely. And then in that case, I think we have just celebrated Acknowledgement Day in the precisely appropriate way.
Yes, by moving on from it.
Now, back then, I believe we did not even have the Brigade of Minions.
I don't think so, no.
And now we have 366 strong members in the Brigade of Minions.
That's right. Is it that? Yes, it is that many. How about that?
Yeah, go to paulandstorm.com to find out how to become part of the Brigade of Minions, which you certainly want to do. I have stuff written down. We talked about this briefly before we started. And I've been kind of disengaged and a little bumming lately, just sort of, you know, to use a word, meh. Kind of the general.
Well, we've talked about this in the past too. That I'm assuming much of it has to do with sort of having been off the road for a little while, and you're going into withdrawal, like attention withdrawal.
Yeah, the Twitters help with that some. That, you know, we do things and get feedback from that. It's certainly not the same as standing out there.
Twitter is methadone for famous people.
And that's the front runner right there for the podcast title. It totally is. It's not the same as being in front of a live audience at all.
It's like taking a little hit of reaction from people.
All I need is one hit to get me by.
Yeah.
Because when I'm with you, I'm halfway high.
Ooh, that's a quote from something.
Yes, it is. We'll leave that to you out there to figure out what that is.
Yeah.
It's a guilty pleasure of mine. But anyway, I do have, I started writing notes, and I really am genuinely, like, when I'm here at the microphone, and it's not like it's a live audience here, but I know eventually it will be.
Mm-hmm.
That it's sort of, I don't know, it just makes me happy. So I have a bunch of crap written down, some of it very frivolous, some of it thought-provoking, some of it crawling up our own asses. There's a little of everything on here.
Well, you just pick one from your vast list of topics, because frankly, as per usual, I got nothing.
Okay, we're going to start with something a little bit thought-provoking.
Uh-huh.
A few branches to this one, we'll see where it goes. If you could pick one technology, or you have to pick one technology that will no longer exist or have existed, just never existed, and we can go from high to low, like we can talk big, like, you know, like electricity, or small, like an application of technology, like automatic doors.
Yep.
So what do you think? What will you banish from the technological record?
Nougat.
Nougat?
Nougat. Here's my reasoning. I like nougat.
Okay.
It's got to be something, for it to carry any weight, it's got to be something that I will miss.
Yes.
But at the same time, I want it to be something that I can do without.
Oh, that's the other part of this, too. You will know that it's missing. The rest of the world won't.
Right. And I think, you know, I will, it will break my heart to never have a true Snickers bar again, because I think the Snickers bar is the perfect food.
For, it's certainly, it is Paul's Scooby snack, yes.
Yeah, it's, well, it's just, you know, it's, it satisfies you. Well, you
it
know,
satisfies well, you.
Long about noon when your appetite's poking at you.
Picturing like an old codger saying that on a commercial.
That is actually roughly a 20-year-old Snickers commercial, and it's I think some woman who's like working on a horse farm or something.
Okay.
Said pretty much that exact quote, and then Paula Poundstone did a bit about it in a stand-up special on HBO roughly also 20 years ago or so.
Okay, so except for the old codger part, it was it was real.
Yeah, except for the fact that it was like a sort of lesbianish woman. Youngish woman. It was codger like. Nonetheless, so that's something that I will miss. But that said, of the entire candy, oeuvre is not the right word, but of the array of candies and candy ingredients, I could do without nougat.
Okay, then you know you've moved the field of conversation to candy. So
That was just the first thing that came to mind. You're
No. It was an unfocused question, and I like that you did that, because now you know I had thought of some things, but I've already thought of those things. So this allows me to think of something else. I would say within that realm of candy, gosh, I would banish candy corn.
And wow, I know we'd have some words over that.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Like you basically said it's a self. You also moved it into self denial.
Yeah,
you didn't have to do that, but well, you did, and it made it more interesting.
I felt like if I didn't do that, I would somehow violate the monkey's paw law, and it would end up turning, you know, coming around on me and screwing me somehow.
And that's why I said candy corn. Like. You recently have made a little bit of a fuss about candy corn on Twitter.
I have. I do like the candy corn.
And I as well really do. Mm-hmm. I'm not in generally a big candy guy. I don't generally seek it out.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because of just the concentrated sugarness of it.
Yep.
Like sort of my intellect knows so strongly that I shouldn't eat candy.
Yep.
And at a certain point, I just started that it overwhelmed my desire to eat it much. But candy corn, more than anything, if there's a bowl of it and maybe I'm actually hungry.
Yep.
And it doesn't even matter. It can be the candy corn that has that little bit of chocolate. I don't care.
Yeah. You know what? Not to get too far afield, but I will say this to stir the pot a bit. For me personally, it has to be Brock's candy corn.
I agree.
And on top of that, it has to be just the right texture. Like if it's been sitting out too long and it loses a certain degree of moisture where it gets a little bit chalky, I can't stand that. And on top of that, I do not like any other variation other than the candy corn, the standard candy corn. Like I don't like the kind with the sort of chocolate tinge to it, nor do I like the candy corn material pumpkin things.
Well, those aren't like shape is important, and not
it
just
is.
With candy corn. I disagree, or at least my own preference.
Right.
I will eat them all. I certainly agree on the toothsomeness part.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they've gone stale, it detracts from it. And I agree that Brock's makes the finest candy corn.
Yep.
And I think with the pumpkins, I don't know if it's, I think it is shape. It's much like with wine or beer or any beverage. Like having different glasses, that's not just bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like some will say, you're just being a liquid snob. Like people say so often.
Yes, many is the time I've heard that phrase in that exact tone, too.
But the way it hits your sensors, I mean, your mouth is just a big old collection of sloppy sensors.
Mm-hmm.
And the way
that's another front runner for the podcast.
The whole thing with the mouth.
A collection of sloppy sensors or something like that. I'd go back and listen to it, but
But yes, I agree that the pumpkins, for all of those reasons.
The pumpkins are bullshit is what
pumpkins
I'm saying.
Pumpkins are bullshit. That's what it comes down to.
Candy corn pumpkins are bullshit.
And you know, there are other places that this topic could go, but I think that nailed it. That just nailed it. It was great.
Yep. So, you were, I didn't let you finish your point, unfortunately. You were talking about self-denial and the selection of candy corn. Like, are you agreeing with me that you need to deny yourself a pleasure for this particular, would you rather-ish question? Or
I did think of it that way, because without that kind of, extra qualification, it's a little nebulous. Or at least in making your decision, because, you know, sort of the Miss America answer, the pageant answer is, I would get rid of nuclear weapons, you know, like who likes nuclear weapons except for, you know, defense contractors who build them.
And Kim Jong-il.
But on the other hand, if they weren't around, would people and nations and things be more prone to be more warring?
That's the title of one of the rejected Schoolhouse Rock episodes, was People and Nations and Things.
Yeah, they're all nouns. But anyway, so yeah, I'm glad that you posed it that way. It makes it a little better. I will say, and this ties into one of our Twitter suggestions, someone asked, pickles, dill or sweet? This is sort of a tangent, but I just want to get it on the record that it's not a technology, but I would get rid of cucumbers altogether if it was possible.
Yeah. cucumbers and cucumber-related technologies.
Right. I will eat pickles, but to answer the question, I take sweet or I take garlicky. The important part is that it be extra vinegary. Half sours, too much tasting like a cucumber, make me throw up. Literally throw up.
Yeah.
So if you see me at a gig and you want to give me something nice, do not give me a cucumber.
Yeah, because if you have not particularly enjoyed Storm's performance, present him with a basket of cucumbers at the end of a show.
Because I can smell, now if they're still wrapped up, I can't. But if a cucumber has been peeled or is just open and about, I can smell like one part per trillion of cucumber.
Cucumbers lay here. There was a fight. They went off in this direction.
Dream of large women.
You're the cucumber whisperer.
Yeah. So I just want that on the record that cucumbers suck.
Much, you know, we're putting cucumbers in the same bin as the candy corn pumpkins.
Really, do you have that? I mean, this is a physical reaction for me.
No, I don't have that physical reaction. I guess they're just together in the bullshit bin.
Right.
See, along with circus peanuts.
Yeah, I that's the same thing for me. I could eat them, you know, but...
Really?
Yeah, I can eat anything except for cucumbers. Anything. Anything.
Could you eat a bicycle?
I might. Gonzo ate a bicycle, so I'll eat a bicycle. Gave him a tummy ache, though.
If Gonzo jumped off the Empire State Building, would you?
I think I would. I think I would.
That's true. Gonzo's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he's cool. Speaking of, I'm going like link to link here through my notes.
Okay.
Actually, you said the word cool. That's one of my notes very directly.
Okay.
This one has a title, The Longevity of Cool.
Okay.
I've brought this up in various contexts over the years with myself, I think, mostly, maybe on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
But the term cool, the colloquial term cool, to mean something that is nice and interesting and favorable, it's hard to describe what the word cool means without using the word cool. It's that ingrained.
Much like pornography. You can't necessarily define it, but you know it when you see it.
Yeah. And I do imagine that the current use of that word did evolve in the 50s. I'm talking out my ass here, but the whole Elvis thing, cool cats, I guess maybe it predated, it could have been the beat generation. I don't know if they came up with cool. I'm going to have to research this, but
you keep talking. I'm just wandering down the wiki.
Thank you. But I recall that there was a period, I believe in the 80s, when the word cool was not cool, that it certainly still existed, and I think maybe it was some kind of Fonzie backlash.
There is a front runner for the title of this podcast.
Yeah, I think Fonzie's popped up in our podcast titles before, for good reason. But, you know, like anything, Fonzie was indisputably cool, you know, for a number of years. And then he became like a college professor. And then it was an old thing, Happy Days. You left it behind. And so, too, I think cool got left behind a little bit in favor of gnarly and super gnarly and things like that. And then it came back, and now it's just permanent. It's like saying the definite article anymore. Hmm. So the question is, are there any other comparable terms, like slang terms, that have become so regular that they don't even sound slang anymore? And another thought is how it's really impossible to just artificially create a term that's going to last for that same thing. Like the Beatles tried it with the word gear.
Right.
They tried to propagate, that's totally gear.
Oh, that's gear.
That's gear.
Hey, Paul, look at those gear birds over there.
Oh, those gear birds are gear, and I've suddenly turned into a Kennedy.
John Lennon Kennedy.
I am not a Liverpudlian.
It was sort of a little bit of old Jewish man in there, too.
They're all the same person. Kennedys, Beatles, old Jewish people. They're all one big, great thing.
That's a good... you know, it's not that different, but the word funky...
Yeah.
I'm sure in whenever it was, I'm going to assume the 60s and maybe 70s, when that term first came out, meant a far more specific thing than it does now.
Yeah, although it also has the pejorative, as in your sweat socks that you left in your locker for a month started to get a bit funky. And cool used to have a very different meaning, like cool, considerate man.
Yes, or cool boy, crazy boy. Cool boy.
Well, that's sort of the same thing. Stay cool, meaning keep your shit together. But the idea of cool being like detached in a bad way is sort of, you know, frosty or how you say aloof. That's what cool was. And maybe that's the thing. Aloofness became something that was desirable.
Right.
We'll look into this later and report back to you, folks. We will get back to you on cool.
Unless we don't.
Yeah, we might not. We're that cool. More notes. Speaking of cool and not cool. Mm-hmm. Link to link. I saw that there was an article, but I didn't read it yet. So I think that entitles us to talk about it. And I think it's germane and relevant to our interests, to all of our interests. So you have geeks, you have nerds, and all the other subsets.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hipsters. And there seems to be now a great deal of hate for hipsters, particularly among the nerd and geek crowds. So my questions are, is that true? Is it fair? And if it is true, then what accounts for it? Now, of course, I have my theories, but I want to hear from you, Paul.
I'm sorry, ask this again?
Okay, disdain for hipsters, particularly among geeks and nerds.
Right.
Is that true? Is it true that is something that is really out there, that geeks and nerds in particular seem to have a disdain
for
what they perceive to be hipsters?
I actually read an article, I cannot for the life of me remember where it was, but I read an article about this recently that actually... there is not only disdain for hipsters among geeks and nerds, there is disdain for hipsters across the entire board of the population, including hipsters.
Right.
This was specifically, it was an article about like consumption.
Oh, you know what?
I read purchasing.
I read the same article, but
keep
going.
And how even the people who will purchase item, you know, clothing and accessories and things that are marked by hipster culture do not self-identify as hipsters and have disdain for hipsters, and they claim that this is what they buy because it's what all of their friends are wearing and doing.
And that's, you know what, I think it was a New Yorker article. That's what it was, and that's why we both read it, because
it may well have been.
If that is so, and I believe that that is so, I could see why nerds and geeks in particular would have a high level of disdain. And here's the why.
Give me the why.
Here's the why. Because if this is a group that clearly, if there are enough people who have been able to paint a target on, there are enough shared characteristics that it can be identified, like we were saying before about cool and about porn, you know it when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
Geeks and nerds at some point had a revelation, you know, and accepted some core part of their ethos or mm-hmm. what they do and what they enjoy, and that they're comfortable enough in it to say, yeah, okay, this doesn't, you know, defy me lock, stock, and barrel. Like, there's not a store that I have to shop at or I won't be a geek anymore or a nerd. It's about following what you love. And I can believe that, you know, folks that would fall into this category of hipsters, it's the same thing. They're following their heartfelt pursuits. However, at the point at which there is clearly some cultural tie to all of these people, that maybe that's sort of the conundrum and the paradox, that part of the identity is to not be pigeonholed. That part of being a hipster is you can't pigeonhole me. You know, I'm that interested in things and I'm moving on. And as soon as something, you know, is identified, I'm moving on.
At risk of grinding everything to a halt, Bullwing.
Okay. All right.
I mean, compelling, but a little boring for the podcast, I think.
Sure.
Something more for a late night discussion over diner food.
I touched a nerve, didn't I, Paul?
You did. I'm a hipster and I'm proud of it, damn it.
All right. Well, let's go with a quickie one here.
Yeah, let's hit me with a new one.
Get things on track. Could internal combustion have existed if steam technology had not come first? Okay, never mind. Chimpanzee riding on a Segway.
Uh-huh.
This pissed me off this week.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So Perry Gripp, who is this incredible musician, singer, songwriter, guy who was in the and is in the band Nerf Herder and creates the catchiest stuff imaginable, mm-hmm. including this song called Chimpanzee Riding on a Segway, which he made into this little video, and it was based on this, I guess, thing from a Japanese TV show about a chimpanzee riding on a Segway. So he writes these things sort of based on these oddities that he finds on the internet a lot of the time.
Yep.
And it had like millions of hits, this video. Catchy as hell.
Very popular, yes.
You can still find it out there. So you can, if you haven't already heard it, you can find it. Well, it got a takedown notice because it used somebody else's intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sort of this notion that, you know, well, you can do that if it's parody, you know, doing something else with it. But still, you can see why they'd have taken it down. What got me and what pissed me off was that in the explanation, it was this organization that is seeking to, like, promote culture by promoting copyright protection.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that seemed like such an Orwellian, you know,
yeah. Yep.
Black is white type of thing.
Yep.
So counterintuitive. The cognitive dissonance was like fingernails on a chalkboard.
Yep. That's pretty bullshit.
So I just wanted to call bullshit on that.
Yeah, I heartily echo your calling of bullshit.
Thank you.
Do you have any Paul and Storm recommends these days?
Let's do the book report. What's that?
Well, you know what? You can do yours. Mine. I'm a repeat. I just grabbed a few of the same books from last time. So
mine's quick. So
go for it.
One of them is actually an appliance box, which I won't read.
Technically not a book.
No, it has writing, but it is not a book. The other is a book called, it's sort of a book, Tiny Footprints by B. Kleiben. Actually, it might be Kleiben. I'm honestly not sure.
Huh.
He was a cartoonist who is best known for his series of Cats. That he did these very funny, odd little cartoons about cats. I don't mean cartoon like Peanuts 3-panel thing. Most of these were one panel. He's often been given the credit for being the originator of that format that you see, like The Far Side and, you know, everyone mm-hmm. that imitated The Far Side or was inspired by The Far Side, I'll yep. say. He came up with that, and he did cartoons for Playboy. And this is a collection of some of his cartoons that actually got me in trouble in elementary school.
Got you in trouble. There's a story I want to hear.
Yep. So I had this book and like my D&D manuals in my backpack. And I was...
Because you were the cool kid.
I was the cool kid in fifth grade. You couldn't get near me or no one would come near me.
You assumed it was because they couldn't.
I did. They said he's too cool to hang out with. I was that too cool. And so I was examining these things at recess, and a shadow fell across my shoulder and head, and Mr. Heckendorn was there.
Oh God, Mr. Heckendorn.
Yep. I never had Mr. Heckendorn as a teacher, but he was well known in the school. And he actually was the first person that I ever knew who had a computer, a pet computer, Commodore PET.
Ooh.
Which he treated like an actual pet. Anyway, which I thought was great. Anyway, he saw me reading these things, and Kleiben, a lot of his illustrations, he actually did most of his work for Playboy. You know, the little cartoons that
yep.
you find.
Yep.
And so a lot of the cartoons in here are kind of smutty and not super naughty stuff.
Yeah.
And Mr. Heckendorn confiscated the backpack with the Kleiben and the D&D.
That bastard.
2 weeks later, he calls me aside and he hands me back the backpack and he's laughing. And he said, He kept it for 2 weeks because he was enjoying it so much. And that I'm not in trouble, but that I just shouldn't bring it back to class again.
Yeah.
So, you know, thank you, Mr. Heckendorn, for being a cool ever dude.
That all worked out.
Paul, did you ever get into trouble for something you brought to school?
I can't really think of anything offhand. I was a well-behaved young man. I tended to more or less skirt below the radar for most of my elementary and junior high and most of high school career.
Yep.
So is that your recommends then as well? Is that you? Everyone give their young children a copy of the Kleiben book?
Screwed up my sexuality for years.
No wonder you're a cat person, boy.
I'm gonna say seek out some of the collections of B. Kleiben if you don't want the smutty stuff. If that's like ew, which I doubt if you listen to us mm-hmm. to have stuck with us this long. Seek it out. But if you are not, if you don't enjoy smut, not that the whole, any of these books are entirely smutty, the
yep.
occasional smut, seek out Cats, which is very cute. And if you're a cat person, you probably already know it, but, if you are a cat person and you don't, you'll thank
clap
me for that.
Clap your hands. If you're already a cat person and you don't, clap your hands.
Womp, womp.
Well, and, I have a recommends.
Yeah.
I have been spending a good bit of time on the Netflix streaming lately. mm-hmm. and I got on a David Mamet kick.
Oh, yeah.
Insofar as I ran across the, House of Games is on Netflix streaming, which is one of my, I wouldn't say all-time favorite movies, but it is a favorite. And I hadn't seen it in years, so I watched that. And then I discovered two other Mamet films on streaming that I had not yet seen and wished that I had. And so I remedied that fact. The first movie is called Homicide. It's from, I think, 1991, I want to say, around then. Stars Joe Mantegna and William H. Macy. And it's about a Jewish detective who... Well, you know what? I'm not going to tell you what it's about. Just go look it up and go watch it because it's awesome. And Joe Mantegna is one of my favorite actors. And the other is another David Mamet movie called Spartan, which a lot of people complain, and not necessarily unjustly, about David Mamet's tendency towards, shall we say, the poetic speech of males with other males. Sort of a heightened... not quite guttural, but a heightened use of profanity and short statements and circular statements to a particular effect, but doesn't always necessarily reflect, shall we say, realism. And Spartan, while still certainly is a David Mamet movie, does a pretty good job of not being too arch like that. It's just a really well put together thriller. Starring Val Kilmer as a Secret Service agent who is hired to track down the missing daughter of the president. And while that sounds incredibly cliche, he manages to make an unbelievably lean and well-constructed thriller. It sort of almost trims all the elements down to their bare essence, but at the same time takes an interesting twist on them. And it's just a really well-made, well-cast, well-acted, well-written film. It's, you know, a little violent, you know, it's certainly no Pride and Prejudice, but if sort of manly thrillers are your thing, you could do far worse than watching Spartan.
You know, I'm going to seek that out and you should too. I have a recommend now that we're here.
Okay.
This was actually, recommended, or it was suggested as a topic on Twitter by a friend of ours, the great Luke Ski.
Mm-hmm.
Who we are going to recommend in this same frame. And it is Dr. Demento. And I'm pretty sure that 99.100% of you are already familiar with Dr. Demento. And at some point in your life, have listened to Dr. Demento.
Yep.
It is his 40th anniversary, and he is still doing his thing.
Yes, the 40th anniversary in October of the Dr. Demento show. He does not know the exact date.
Which I think is beautiful.
I think that's great. He knows it was in October. He never really was, you know, certainly didn't expect the Dr. Demento show to live for 40 years. So he never sort of wrote, there's no record of the exact date, I guess. So he just celebrates it in October.
But his knowledge of music and, of course, of dementia music in particular is just astounding. And the number of artists that have come along through it and from it. It's a huge cultural impact.
Yeah. You know, a factoid about him that doesn't really have anything to do with his show or anything, but a thing that just made me love him that much more that I found out recently is apparently when you go over to Dr. Demento's house, when you go to his house for the first time, he has you choose a record from his vast collection and you pick one and he breaks it over your head.
Yeah.
I think that's totally and completely awesome.
Indeed. Indeed it is. And you can go to, I guess it's just drdemento.com.
Yep. Dr. Demento.
Where he continues to do his show. And it is amazing. So that's Paul and Storm recommends for this day.
Absolutely. Shall we get to the business of business?
Yes, let's take the downhill run to Papa Ate.
I'm going to try and get through this relatively quickly because there's a lot of it, but it's awesome. As we have mentioned, there is a new batch of Wootstocks. We now have started confirming guests for said Wootstocks, and they're all pretty awesome. Before that, though, I should mention, on October 23rd, We are in Boulder, Colorado. It's not a Woodstock, but it is a show with us and Adam Savage at the Boulder Theater, along with special guest Phil Plate, the bad astronomer.
Yeah, Phil.
Yeah.
So that's going to be awesome. Sort of a warm up, a Woodstock warm up, which is not to say it's going to be a lesser show. It's just going to be
a different vibe.
Different vibe. Yeah. More relaxed. You know, we're stretching out a bit because we have more room. We have more than 20 minutes to do our thing. Then a row of Woodstocks. Let me just go to it. On Wednesday, the 27th of October, we're in Los Angeles at Largo. And speaking of Dr. Demento, this is going to be a mostly music Woodstock in honor of his 40th anniversary. Chris Hardwick is filling in for Will Wheaton at that show. Here are the confirmed guests as of tonight's recording.
Oh, yeah.
Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah.
Hard and Firm.
Yeah.
Molly Lewis.
Yeah.
Mike Furman.
Yeah.
Eric Schwartz.
Yeah.
Marissa Tancheroen and Jed Whedon.
Yeah.
And a special appearance by Dr. Demento.
Oh, yeah.
There is still another guest or two to be confirmed. That's coming soon. That goes for all these shows. There are still more guests coming for each of them. But let me go to the next one. Friday, October 29th in New York City at the Best Buy Theater, formerly the Nokia, right there in Times Square.
Yow.
Jonathan Colton will be filling in for Will Wheaton as co-host of this show. Confirmed guests are Marion Call, Jason Finn, and MC Frontalot. On Sunday, the 31st, Halloween, we are in Boston at the Wilbur Theater. Bill Corbett and Kevin Murphy will be filling in for Will Wheaton at that show.
Oh.
Confirmed guests, Marion Call once again.
Oh.
And Grant Imahara.
Oh.
On Tuesday, November 2nd, we will be in Austin at the Paramount Theater. And Neil Effing Gaiman will be filling in for Will Wheaton at that show.
Ooh.
I feel like I'm giving you verbal fireworks. Confirmed guests for that show: Bill Amend,
ooh,
Jason Finn,
ooh,
Molly Lewis,
ooh,
and Stephen Steptoe Toulouse,
ooh.
And finally, on Wednesday, November 3rd, we're in Dallas at the Granada Theater with the hilarious Paul F. Tompkins filling in for Will Wheaton.
Wabba dabba.
Once again, confirmed guests for that show are Bill Amend.
Wabba dabba.
Jason Finn.
Wabba dabba.
Molly Lewis.
Wabba dabba.
And Stephen Steptoe Toulouse.
Wabba dabba.
Go to Woodstock.net for all the ticketing links for those shows. You should get your tickets because most of them we expect, or at least hope, will sell out. They're all going to be great shows, and we're really looking forward to them as much as we are going to miss the physical presence of Will Wheaton at them.
Very much we will. But he'll be back. He will be back to Woodstock.
He will at future Woodstocks, we promise. And there will be more Woodstocks eventually.
It is too much fun to not do more of them.
That's right.
Go to pollenstorm.com to find out more about that, to find out about other things, and to find out how to become part of the Brigade of Minions. Now is the time, because other times were not now. I'm Storm.
And I am Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Oh, I need a good close off, so I'm going to say, it's a thrill, it's a chill, it's a bang, it's a boom, but it's the whap that makes a tic-tac.
Go do things.